Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. My name is Daniel Feuerstein, and this is normally not the day to have a show. I was going to have it next Tuesday, but obviously the circumstances involving a certain player that was supposed to have been signed by the league, by New York City FC, is now no longer a part of New York City FC. As everyone knows, at the moment, Frank Lampard, his loan deal has been extended over at Manchester City. Of course, Manchester City running things with New York City FC as one of their side clubs. Of course, they also have Melbourne City FC over in the Australian A-League and a Japanese league as well. But obviously, we're not here to basically call out Major League Soccer, but the point is that we do like and love Major League Soccer. We do enjoy talking about MLS, but when there's something like this that comes out of the woodwork, that comes out of the blue, you know, we need to hold Major League Soccer accountable for the usage of single entity, or maybe it's too late to keep single entity. Maybe it's time to move forward and allow the clubs to be autonomous and to go ahead. Joining me to discuss this situation, of course, I believe are the two best Manchester City fans that I know, one in the United States and one in Canada, that have been dedicated to Manchester City since I've known them, of course. Joining me at the moment, Dwayne Rollins from the 24th Minute blog up in Canada, the Canadian Soccer News Group, and of course he writes about Toronto FC. Hopefully we'll get on Kartik Krishnayer of the Kartik Report and World Soccer Talk on here. But Dwayne, when the hours were counting down to 2015, as we said goodbye to 2014, and you've heard Frank Lampard's loan deal was extended by the parent club, Manchester City, what were your thoughts right away? And at the same time, the outrage you saw all over Twitter, Facebook, not just from the new New York City fans, but from the American and North American soccer media?
Well, my thoughts were that it was expected to me. In fact, if you look back and read some of the things I was saying back in October and all that, anyone who watched Manchester City closely enough and was listening to the things carefully kind of got an inkling that this was going to happen. He was just simply too valuable to that team in what is frankly a more important competition for the City Football Group, and we'll touch on that later, I'm sure. But that certainly was what I expected. In terms of the reaction, before I get into that, I do want to make it up clear that I think that fans have a right to be upset and to be frustrated. Fans are fans, and that's what they do, and they have every right to feel how they feel about this, no matter what that feelings are. I think that the fans that bought into NYCFC, the paid season ticket deposits or what have you, certainly with the understanding that Lampard would be there at the start of the year, they certainly have a greater stake in this. I think fans of MLS, they have the right to feel how they feel, but I think that in some cases they may be overreacting ever so slightly based on some of their fears around this being Chivas USA too.
Well, maybe so, but, you know, the big question, though, Dwayne, is this. Is that some people are confused with the type of contract that Lampard signed. I mean, was it an MLS contract? Was this a Manchester City contract? Or was it this whole – I mean, you had to sign something to be a part of this whole situation. Of course, Manchester City being the main parent of all these clubs outside of England.
Yeah, my understanding is that – and it is – sketchy, as many things are. And this is where I put a lot of blame on MLS's instinct to be secretive. And I know that there are others out there that will blame the City Football Group, Manchester City, whoever you want to frame that, and that's fine. But to me, this all speaks into MLSing. They're keeping things secret. They're kind of being loose with the truth in a lot of cases. My understanding of the deal is that it is a contract, a personal services contract with City Football Group, and then he was then additionally registered with the English FA with a short-term contract that had to be renewed. Now, we never heard of any of that prior to that, although we should have had an inkling when the MLS salaries came out and David Villas was on there and his was not. That should have been a tip-off to us that he didn't have an MLS contract at that point. Mark Abbott was talking to Alexi Lawless earlier this week, and he sort of was using a bit of he was being a bit pedantic. He was being a bit literal, saying that, you know, there was agreement in place, and there was. There was an agreement that he was going to come to New York after he was done in Manchester, but it certainly was sold as a contract with the MLS team, even though that was the intention. That wasn't literally what happened, and MLS and New York City and City Football Group, for whatever reason, collectively decided that they would just sort of they just assumed it wouldn't. No one would ever find out. Probably, I don't think they were trying to hide anything. I think that they just didn't think that it was necessary to get into the details of the situation, and it bit them in the butt. And joining us right now is Kartik Krishnar from World Soccer Talk, as well as the Kartik Report. Kartik, of course, won the along with Dwayne Rollins. Kartik won the top as well in the American side of things down here as a Manchester City supporter. Kartik, your opinion about, after what Dwayne was talking about, what's your opinion about this whole situation with Frank Lampard originally coming to New York City FC and now with Manchester City and the loan deal, or was it a loan deal, being extended?
Well, it wasn't a loan deal. It leads to the point of December 31st. Dwayne has outlined exactly what we understand the situation to be. It seems like reporters on opposite sides of the Atlantic are being told different things. I know the reporters I talk to in the northwest of England are all being told that Lampard had a one-year deal with Manchester City that expires June 30th, and that there was a break clause in that contract that could have been exercised December 31st. It was not exercised. That means Lampard, unless he is released, unless his contract is terminated and released by Manchester City before that, cannot sign an MLS deal, or there's an MLS deal in place, but he cannot begin that MLS deal until July 1st, the opening of the transfer window, once contracts in England are done, one-year contracts. There are reports.
Don't worry, we'll get him back.
I believe by Mark Abbott and MLS brass, that in fact Lampard, now that 2015 has started, is under an MLS contract. He's contracted, has been, you know, assigned to New York City FC. We know how MLS contracts work, and that he is now on loan to Manchester City as of January 1st, 2015, which would mean his Wikipedia entry right now is incorrect, and he would go back down to four league goals when he was a Manchester City contracted player and one league goal in his loan period. I'm just throwing the Wikipedia thing out there because it's so absurd. The semantics of this whole thing. I think Dwayne is absolutely right. MLS's instinct to be secretive and to be sneaky, which has been an instinct of the league brass since 1996, has bit them in the rear end this time. And maybe we should have noticed when the Players Union put out the salaries. David Villa was on there, and who was obviously signed by New York City FC and MLS. Kaká, who was signed by Orlando City, was on there. He's been loaned out, but Villa was loaned out for a few weeks as well to Melbourne City in the A-League, and Lampard wasn't on there. I guess we all missed that. Reporters didn't ask the right questions with this deal when it was consummated, because we were told in late July of 2013 that Lampard had a two-year deal with New York City FC. That's how it was announced. Then, if you go back through the press releases that Manchester City have issued in August when he first moved to Manchester, September, October, November, and December, as the, quote, what we had assumed with a loan period was expiring, Manchester City, and this is really important, Daniel, because there are people who are saying that Manchester City was part of the deception. Manchester City Football Club never once put out an official press statement that called Frank Lampard an on-loan player. It was assumed because the media on both sides of the Atlantic had characterized his move to Manchester City as a loan, that we were calling it a loan. But go back, September, October, November, December, right till December 31st, Manchester City's communications department, Vicky Clawson and everybody who works under her there, never once characterized this as a loan.
Wow. That's unbelievable what's been happening. Of course, these last couple of days, it all started when 2014 was going to say goodbye, but it hung around a little bit till 2015 was rung in because of this whole situation. Dwayne, obviously the Premier League is the best league in the world. Obviously, the top talents go to England to fight for the Premier League title, to at least they, you know, some would say the best clubs when they qualify for the UEFA Champions League to be in some of those big matches in Europe as well as the Europa League. You know, is this, do you think that Frank, because when he was with Man City at the time before this whole thing happened, do you think he wanted to stay at Man City to go get one more opportunity at Premier League glory?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He was very careful to be quiet throughout it all and just sort of let the backroom stuff play itself out. But his silence was kind of glaring in the sense that he wasn't saying that he was going to go to New York and he wasn't saying that he was going to leave. I don't think Frank Lampard necessarily – he was convinced, I think, on some levels that his Premier League days were done. I think that most people at City and Lampard's group probably thought that he was going to Manchester to train a little bit, maybe get some League Cup games. Get a little bit of action and then go to New York. But then suddenly he became, you know, a vital bench piece for a title contending club, a club that's in the final 16 of the UEFA Champions League. And look, I think this is the one area that some MLS fans need to take a step back and if they're blaming Lampard and understand the emotions and the, you know, just the humanness of it. I don't think there's very many people in the world that would turn down the opportunity to chase the final Premier League championship, to turn down the opportunity to play it at the new camp in the Champions League, to go play MLS games in March. I just don't think that that's a realistic expectation people have of Lampard. This is an unexpected opportunity for him. I truly do not believe it was the intention of Manchester to pull a fast one and keep him. I think this is a circumstance and a circumstance that worked itself up that is unlikely to repeat itself moving forward very often.
Absolutely. And Cardick, obviously it took a while for Commissioner Don Garber to finally answer these questions of why this situation happened, but it kind of sounded like he kind of just maybe brushed it off his shoulder a little bit, like, well, you know, we've seen it many times when you've seen players like Thierry Henry, David Beckham, and other European stars. They come to MLS in July after a World Cup or during the summer window, and he just brushed it off and said Frank Lampard in some ways is no different. He'll be coming in July. I mean, how do you feel when the commissioner of this league that obviously keeps on trying to strive to be one of the top leagues in the world, and he just chalks it up like it's like any typical type of transfer in the summer window coming to MLS in the middle of the summer?
Okay, 2 points here. Firstly, that is true. There have been countless players who have come to Major League Soccer during the summer window, even David Beckham being loaned out twice to Milan, didn't come back until the summer window. The MLS fanboy culture, which has now become a dominant force in the blogosphere here in North America, Dwayne knows exactly what I'm speaking of. This fanboy element around Major League Soccer means that everything, there's never any perspective on some of the analysis of these things. So you could just go back and look at Thierry Henry joining the Red Bulls in August or July for that friendly against Tottenham. Right, July 28th or something. That was when he joined the club. You could look at obviously Robbie Keane joined after a Premier League season where he had been loaned to another club, where he'd been loaned to West Ham from Spurs, finished out his loan at West Ham, then came to the Galaxy, and then obviously the Beckham case as well. Both cases, but there's never any perspective on this. the point Dwayne made, I have a very, very good source in the northwest of England who tells me that City Football Group is very concerned about protecting Frank Lampard's image from any kind of backlash when he comes to New York, eventually comes to North America, comes to Major League Soccer. So they've been very careful, as Dwayne mentioned, not to have him speak. They've been very careful not to have him perceived in the wrong way about this. But this source told me we would be lying to ourselves and kidding ourselves if we did not realize the major driver of this deal was not Manchester City or New York City FC or anyone. It was Frank Lampard himself. He thought, as Dwayne said, he was going over just to get a couple League Cup games, you know, maybe an occasional run out in a Premier League match, and basically just staying fit. Instead, he became a vital part of a title chasing team, a team that's in to the knockout stages of the Champions League. So you have to put yourself in the shoes of a professional footballer who's won 3 Premier League titles, has won many domestic cup trophies, has won the Europa League, has won the European Cup, the Champions League. He has one last shot at this. And to go play games at Yankee Stadium in March, I know the first game for New York City is just up the road for me in Orlando on turf. You know, to leave being in a 2-leg tie against Barcelona at the Camp Nou, the second leg will be at the Camp Nou to play at the Citrus Bowl on turf. It's not something high-level professional footballers will do if they're still playing at that high level. You're kidding yourself if you think he would. To go train in Jacksonville for 2 weeks, playing against the University of North Florida and essentially an 11-a-sided game, you know, a training game. I mean, that's not what Frank Lampard, at this stage in his career, having shown what he's shown the last few months. Let's not forget, he got hurt in October in the game against Spurs, got carted off the pitch, and the thought was, oh, gosh, Lampard's 36, not going to recover from this. We won't see him until MLS season kicks off, if he recovers. He's back 3 or 4 weeks later and playing at an even higher level. So this is just what any professional would do. As to Garver's comments, I learned to tune out a lot of what Garver says. So, and the fact that it took him 5 days or 4 days to address this also was quite comical.
You know, Dwayne, and of course, I can agree with Kardik. You and I are fanboys, that's for sure. But honestly, Dwayne, you know, the time it took for Garver to make this response, I mean, this was like on the, like we said already, New Year's Eve was coming. And into the new year now, and then finally on Sunday, Garber makes this response, but it just doesn't sound strong enough. Has Don Garber now lost credibility running Major League Soccer, not from the front office and not from the owners, but the people who basically believed in what he was doing by buying Chivas USA back, selling it to a brand new ownership in Los Angeles that's going to start in 2017. Arthur Blank, now running Atlanta MLS, also coming in 2017, talking to potential new teams that might be going through financial promotion from NASL or USL Pro into MLS. Has he lost credibility now by some of the people not within the Board of Governors of Major League Soccer?
I'm not sure. I mean, he does ultimately speak for the ownership here, and they're ultimately, he's making a lot of money by bringing all these groups in. He made a lot of money by bringing NYCFC in. In terms of this issue, this is ultimately where I come down with this Lampard stuff. And I want to stress that from a purely fan perspective, especially from an NYCFC fan perspective, I get the frustration, I get the anger, I get all of that. That's legit. But in terms of what this really means to MLS, I think that we need to take a step back sometimes and look at it. I don't, obviously the misleading with the contract's not ideal, but you know, that's, MLS does that all the time. They do stuff like that all the time. And if he hasn't lost credibility by now, he's not going to lose it. And Kardik said, used the term MLS fanboy. There is a sort of defensive protectiveness that comes from both the MLS media partners and a lot of their bigger fans, that they instantly get their backs up whenever MLS is challenged. And that's part of the reason, in my mind, they get away with so much of the secrecy. They buy into this idea that they have to operate in these ways in order to survive. It's the great NESL 1.0 PTSD that infects American soccer, that they refuse to sort of step away from some of this ridiculous protective and secrecy and protection stuff that they put out there. I don't think Garber's lost any credibility really per se. I mean, those of us who don't necessarily trust a word that comes out of his mouth still aren't, and those that believe that he is the greatest commissioner in North American sports, and there's people out there that believe that, they're still going to believe that as well.
Kardik, there's an article from a blogger, from a Zach Wasek on FanSided. He believes that, and this is where I kind of do agree with him in a way. Look, I agree with Dwayne. I think John Garber has done a fantastic job keeping the league going, keeping the league afloat, making sure that we don't have Major League Soccer becoming these last several other American soccer leagues, stay around for maybe 5, 10, 15 years, and then it's gone because all the finances have been liquidated, so to speak, when you lose some of these great leagues. But maybe is it time for Garber to say goodbye? Maybe is it time for the owners to say, I mean, I know he signed a new 5-year deal, but is this the last 5-year deal you think they should have him around for?
Yeah, that'll take him to 20 years. It was pretty dire shape. MLS was in 1999 when the Board of Governors of the league decided to fire Doug Logan and bring in Don Garber. And Garber's mission was very much to kind of save this thing and then enter a period of smart growth and Soccer United marketing. But let me not downplay that. The creation and success of some has really driven MLS since then. Expansion into Toronto, Dwayne's town, which was very important. Most cosmopolitan city in North America, was important to bring real football fans to MLS, which is what Toronto began doing. That was the start of MLS 2.0. But Garber's public statements have gotten more and more bizarre over the course of the last couple of years. More defensive, more contradictory. I have to think that since Ivan Gazidis left, and I know Arsenal fans don't want to hear about Ivan Gazidis, there are protests going on. I saw a sign at the last match of the Emirates, Gazidis out. But I think Gazidis was really the glue that made MLS move in kind of a progressive and smart direction. And since Gazidis left to take that chief executive post at Arsenal, when Stan Kroenke bought the team, and Kroenke, of course, knew him through MLS, things have just haven't been as crisp and sharp for Mr. Garber. So maybe he stays and you get a real functioning, strong chief executive like a Gazidis. Mark Abbott has his strengths. Mark Abbott is a guy who's been with the league for a very long time, but he doesn't necessarily have the credibility in the football world, the soccer world that Gazidis did, and I think Gazidis is a big miss. They haven't replaced him.
Yeah, I think that's the big question there as well. But let me throw this out at you, Dwayne. Obviously, Kardec's always talked about financial fair play in Europe. Obviously, Barcelona's been hit with some sort of fine with it. They're not allowed to make any transfers. I think PSG might be close to getting tagged on the financial fair play situation. I think maybe also Man City's been tagged with it. Do you feel, and if I'm going out of bounds, you can go ahead and say it, but do you feel that in a certain way this is trying to circumvent financial fair play so Manchester City can keep Lampard and not get hit with some sort of fine?
I don't think it is. It is yes and no is the answer. Absolutely, the affiliate clubs that they have started all over the world have a lot to do with financial fair play. Bobby McMahon, writing in Forbes, spoke to this brilliantly. I encourage you to look that out if you're out there. Everything has to be viewed through the lens of this now. And a club like Manchester City that, without getting into sort of the debate around FFP, has to play catch-up and is sort of disadvantaged by these rules, by these clubs that have been around for forever as commercial entities. And it had to really find different ways, unique ways. And then one of the ways that it's done is to try and reach out through the affiliate clubs. They're doing things like they're maybe hiding some of their scouting resources in the books of these other clubs, things like that. But it's about branding, and it's about just trying to build the brand as well. So in terms of getting Frank Lampard for a year, I think that in terms of the moneyed cities talking about, it's not really about hiding him. And in fact, the fact that he was on a short-term contract there is likely illustrative of the fact that they had to disclose what they were paying him to count against the books. So it is about financial fair play, but it's not about financial fair play as a trickery to get Lampard. They could have afforded Lampard even with the restrictions that they had last year. This just was a, and they are in fact paying him money, that he is in fact counting on their books right now.
Okay, that's pretty good to hear about that, obviously. Cardick, you know, David Villa was the first signing for New York City FC, and, you know, obviously for him to go to their Australian club in the A-League, obviously Melbourne City FC, he was supposed to be there on a 10-game loan deal in Australia to get, you know, just to stay match fit before the MLS season got underway. He only played 4 games because Man City pulled him out for a promotional tour of NYCFC. I mean, I don't know if there was any outrage in Australia at all because of this situation. Did you hear of any outrage from the Melbourne City fans? They felt that, you know, 4 down, 6 to go, and those 6 were never played.
Yeah, well, they were a little bit perturbed by it. I mean, I talked to Ahmed Youssef, our friend, there, but they didn't. There wasn't any kind of this outrage. Look, a lot of this outrage has been manufactured by the blogosphere and MLS MLS fanboys, as Dwayne has alluded to, and then I've alluded to. That's a key cause of a lot of this outrage. I would encourage everybody to read Bobby McMahon's article that Dwayne referenced in Forbes that he published yesterday. I think it was the best read on this subject. Yes, there is Manchester City. I think the big takeaway from that is that they're able to absorb some of the – have the sister clubs absorb some of the scouting costs, some of the other resource costs. But if the common thing now is to say that Lampard was part of an FFP dodge, well, he signed a contract directly with Manchester City, so there's no FFP dodge involved. I mean, the dodge that would be involved potentially if he stayed on contract with Manchester City and was loaned to NYCFC would be a dodge of the MLS salary cap. Because we know there have been some funny things that have happened with loan deals with DPs in the past. One year Seattle took somebody on loan. I'm blanking out on who specifically. But there were some questions about the salary and where the salary was stashed. And I think Chicago also, when they took Nery Castillo 1 year, and he was a DP, he came in as a DP, but some of the salary was stashed because he had come in on loan. So that would have been actually – it would have been more of an MLS salary cap question. Key question, but it's very fashionable, particularly in the UK press, where a lot of the media is old-fashioned. Some of them are supporters of Liverpool or supporters of Manchester United. They like to question anything Manchester City or Chelsea does. I mean, I read a very creative piece about how Chelsea is running afoul of FFP rules because they sign players and they just loan them out, and they have some 30 players out on loan. But again, like Dwayne said, and like Bobby McMahon argued in the piece, you have to get creative now if you're not one of those established clubs like Liverpool, like Manchester United, like Bayern, like Barcelona and Real Madrid to get around FFP as you try and get up to that commercial level. And both Chelsea and Manchester City, and I presume PSG as well, have had to get creative in different ways. And Chelsea's gotten creative with loans, and Manchester City's gotten creative with the sister clubs.
Absolutely. Once again, everyone, this is the Four Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, our special report show here. Frank Lampard, of course, the contract was signed over at Manchester City. And, of course, he will be coming to MLS with NYCFC this coming July. And he'll be ready for August because he will definitely need a break before he starts playing for the Manchester City club, that is New York City FC, in August. Once again, I'm with Dwayne Rollins from the 24th Minute Blog, member of the Canadian Soccer News Group, as well as Cardick Kirschneier from World Soccer Talk, of course, the Cardick Report, covering Florida soccer up and down the state. Dwayne, now I need to ask you a personal question, because obviously, you know, you're a Toronto boy. You're a Toronto FC guy. You cover them. You've rooted, you know, you're supporting them at the same time, but you do cover for them. And you also support Manchester City. What will happen to you now? Will you be wearing a split red and Manchester blue jersey now because Toronto's going to face New York City FC? How are you going to handle this sort of situation?
Well, one of the things that first attracted to me, there was family connection back there, but that spoke to me about City back in the day was it was about community and about being true to yourself. So I just because this club is affiliated with Manchester, I will look at them a little bit more closely. I will be interested in any potential loans that they put over here of their younger players. But you don't abandon your local club. That's where I come from, and I take that from the fact that my family could have selected a red club over there that would have been a hell of a lot easier for many years to do. So that's where I come from a personal level.
So what you're saying is that you're avoiding ridicule from Knight and Rycroft.
No, it's all fine. Like I said, I am interested in them, and I will probably, I'm doing a little bit of writing for Typical City, the city blog over there, to follow them from a Manchester perspective. But my interest in NYCFC will be not necessarily from an MLS perspective; it'll be from a City Football Group Manchester perspective.
Okay, that's pretty good. And of course, Cardiff, of course, they're going to be taking on Orlando City. Like you said, you're going to head up to Orlando. You're going to check out Orlando's first ever MLS game as they open up the schedule at the Citrus Bowl and facing New York City FC. What will you take from that match, obviously? Because, like, I'm joking around with Dwayne, obviously, but, you're Manchester City through and through, that there's no doubt about that. But how are you going to handle this whole situation?
Well, it's interesting. I was pleased that Orlando's opening with them. Obviously, get the opportunity to see David Villa, and if there are loan players, youth players from Manchester City that are there initially, it's going to be an interesting season because when you compare those two teams, Orlando has done everything right to get into Major League Soccer. They built it organically. They built it at the Division III level, which is more difficult than doing it even at the level I worked at the North American Soccer League. I mean, we had two teams in the state of Florida, Fort Lauderdale and Tampa Bay, Fort Lauderdale being my local club that I support, that were a tier above Orlando in the soccer pyramid. And, in fact, in year one of Orlando City being in Central Florida and Fort Lauderdale having been rebranded, there was a lot of talk. I talked to people in MLS who said, look, there's really kind of a competition between those two. We don't really want to go back to the Tampa market. We feel like we were burnt there. We do want to go back to South Florida. And Orlando, they're doing some interesting things, but it's not really a market we've been thinking about actively. They built something very, very community-oriented, very, very organic there. New York, on the other hand, was just given a team. Let's just face it. They were just given a team without any organic movement, without any real – this is why I find this whole narrative about all the NYCFC fans who were put out by Lampard and what's happened. They don't have any fans. They have – if you talk about plastic fans in a manufactured club, that is what they are. Because there was no mass movement to get a second New York City club that was fan-oriented other than the Borough Boys who ended up going to the Cosmos. It wasn't like Philadelphia. It wasn't like Portland, who, of course, always supported their Division II team. It wasn't like Toronto before Toronto FC went there. It wasn't like the kind of support that was around Vancouver. And I'm talking about Orlando at the D2, D3 level, having an incredible supporters base that was developed over the course of three and four seasons. But now that they're both in Major League Soccer, I have to say, I'm looking at the moves, the player personnel moves both clubs are making, and this Lampard business aside, I really like what Jason Kreis and Claudio Reyna have done to build a team for Major League Soccer as opposed to what Orlando with Adrian Heath is doing. So I think New York City FC is going to have a better team this season. I mean, obviously, we'll see what happens. Super Draft Combine starts 2 days down here in Fort Lauderdale, and then Draft in Philadelphia, I'll be there as well. I'll be both at the Combine and the Draft, really to cover Orlando, and since they're my local MLS team. And we'll see how the roster fills out. But at this point, I really think New York has the better team. And if they do get Lampard in July, they have an opportunity to make the playoffs as an expansion team because the Eastern Conference is so weak. And we'll see how Toronto is reconfigured this season. We'll see if DC United can be as strong. Something tells me they won't be. But I really like the roster that Jason Kreis and Claudio Reyna have put together, if that's your question, comparing New York and Orlando. I wasn't sure if that's what it was, but
absolutely. I just got to say here, Dwayne, is that Jason Kreis and Claudio Reyna have done a very good job picking the right players, help New York City FC become at least a team to be reckoned with, at least a team that can show that possibly that they are going to fight for one of those playoff spots this season. Just to see what Kreis has done in the past with Real Salt Lake as a head coach, what do you see as a positive besides Kreis and Reyna? What other positives do you see with New York City FC starting off in 2015?
Well, yeah, That's it. I mean, a lot of people, when they get bogged down in this, like, Man City Junior thing, and they tie it into the Chivas experiment, which is just you can't compare it to that, because Chivas just completely abandoned that team for 4 or 5 years. There was no resources being put into it at all. It's a bit silly to think that Manchester's they're going to have this opportunity to get a foothold in New York, and then they're just going to, like, let it, you know, flush it down a toilet. That's just silly. They've gone out and they've got the top MLS talent they could find at the front office level and the management level, and they're going to create a team. And this is, you know, ultimately where I come down on the Lampard thing too, is it's going to blow over if they're successful. The people that are angry and are walking away, well, they weren't that invested anyway, and those that show up and start to support this team from day one are only going to look at those results on the pitch. And I think that the one area, you know, people, again, to go back to the Chivas example, they look at, in the early days, some of the players that Guadalajara loaned up to MLS weren't of MLS standard. I think that if you do see a couple players coming over from Manchester, that Kreis is over there, he's going to understand what an MLS level is. The elite development squad at Manchester City is one of the best academies going in the UK right now, if not in the continent as well. They're in the final stages of the UEFA Youth Champions League again. There is talent there that absolutely can step in and be an impact player at MLS. City Football Group has resources, and they're going to use it to make sure that they're successful in this. Yes, the Manchester club is ultimately going to be their number one priority, but that doesn't mean that NYCFC can't be successful on its own merits at an MLS level, and I think that's the biggest advantage they have going in.
Carter, two-part question here. Number one, talking about the outrage from the supporters, there has been massive reports coming out saying season ticket holders, either it's been at 11,000, 12,000, some have said 22,000. We don't know about that one, but they're asking for refunds for this whole Frank Lampard situation. This is part one of this question. They still have David Villa. I mean, he's still going to do something there. But for some reason, it's like Frank Lampard was the guy that made them make this push to get 11,000 season tickets holders, and now they're asking for refunds because of this whole situation. Is that fair enough to say it's, you know, Lampard is the only reason that they bought season tickets?
Talk about plastic fans. I just alluded to that a minute ago. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
This is a clear example of not supporting your community club, not supporting the shirt, but because they don't have anything to support. I contrasted it with Orlando, who's been at the Division III level for the last 4 years and built a supporters base playing actually a division below the other two professional teams in the state of Florida did. Even though they would always beat Tampa Bay, they were technically below them in the pyramid. They were below Fort Lauderdale in the pyramid. So they built an organic fan base. Seattle, Portland, Montreal, Toronto, and Dwayne, you know, you guys had Danny Dicchio and Rohan Ricketts and Laurent Robert and all these guys the first couple of years. You guys still filled that plate. And could have, and if they hadn't charged so darn much for tickets, might have, you know, been able to fill the Sky Dome. I mean, this is a completely – this is Garber's – Garber had an agenda to get a second New York team, and he forced the issue. He pushed the issue, and I hate to keep bringing this up because I'm not a fan of the organization. And I, you know, I had my run-ins with them at the NASL, which is why I'm no longer working at the NASL, among the reasons, the really chief reason. But the New York Cosmos coming back did kind of push Garber to where he kind of panicked and felt like he had to exercise that relationship he had with Soriano, that he and Nelson Rodriguez and Ivan Gazidis, by the way, is a Manchester City supporter, or was before he became Arsenal's chief executive. So he had the relationship with City prior. And Soriano tried to put a team in Miami, remember, in 2008, 2009 time period on behalf of Barcelona. There were some issues that forced him to pull out. But Soriano had this idea of putting a team in MLS for a long time. So Garber, once the Cosmos thing happened, Cosmos went to NASL. NASL started getting very arrogant, saying some very stupid things about challenging MLS. They're still saying some of those stupid things. And, I mean, the owners of this club here, my club, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, are talking about how Orlando City has wasted $100 million because they're on equal footing with them. You know, two Florida teams are on equal footing, and Fort Lauderdale's $100 million to the good. I mean, with that kind of logic, you just can't even have a discussion with people. So that's what the owners of Fort Lauderdale seem to think. But they're all wet. But my point being, the Cosmos did kind of push some sort of panic button in Garber. So he went out and he kind of manufactured this New York City 2 situation to the point where then they felt like they have to sign star players and make it about the stars, because it's also New York and it's a manufactured club and it's a foreign club. I mean, there's this link to a foreign club, to where that's how they're gonna get fans. And then lo and behold, this situation arises. This doesn't bode well for the future of the second New York team, because if people were buying season tickets just because of Frank Lampard, and I want to believe it's a small percentage of fans, and those fans are classic fans, obviously, then it's a problem. I mean, I can understand if it's a Chelsea fan that loved Lampard, or maybe a West Ham fan, although West Ham fans tend to not like Lampard. They like Joe Cole, Jermaine Defoe. I was having a discussion with a West Ham fan the other day. They say Defoe left the club with class. Lampard left the club basically saying, I'm going to a better club. Defoe said, hey, I'm a West Ham boy. I just have to go to Spurs because better club. It's good for my career. So, but the point being, I think that this is a fundamental problem. If MLS is going to have to keep pumping stars into that second New York team, or depend on City Football Group to continue pumping stars into that second New York team in order to have any sort of success in that market, it's going to be a big problem. And you know what? This Lampard situation, it's just the window dressing. The real problems are, A, they don't have a permanent training ground. B, they don't have a stadium or a stadium plan on the horizon, and they're playing at a baseball stadium, where I went to the Chelsea-Man City game there a year ago, or now almost 2 years ago, the week after this team was announced. Horrible sight lines, terrible venue for soccer. And the third thing, of course, being that they don't have a sustainable supporters base and really a master plan to keep supporters around. So this is these are the bigger problems for the club. All this whole Lampard business is just going to be it might be convenient for MLS to keep it out there, because people aren't asking questions about, well, how long exactly is the team going to play at Yankee Stadium? Why did you force Orlando to get a stadium? Why did you force Atlanta to get a stadium? Why are you forcing Miami to get a stadium? Why are you forcing Minnesota to get a stadium when you didn't do that with New York?
And that is going to be my next question, but I'll aim it over at Dwayne. And Dwayne, what does happen if there's been so many long years that, you know, they're trying to find a site within the five boroughs, that they don't find one? I mean, I know they're talking about finding places back in Queens, Brooklyn. I know they're not going to be able to be at the park near where the Mets are at Flushing Meadows Park, because the Flushing River is underneath the section of where they want to build the original stadium in Queens. You know, what happens if Manchester City, they find out that there's no place to build a stadium within the five boroughs? And they might have to put it either somewhere in Long Island or north of the Bronx in Westchester County. Some are saying by Yonkers Raceway, the harness racing track. I mean, will Manchester City pull out, or are they just going to stick with it till they find a spot?
I don't necessarily think Manchester City is going to pull out that quickly or that sort of frivolously, but certainly the idea of a stadium is a major concern. The way that this team has been marketed, and such as they do have a natural supporters base, and I agree with Cardick that it's a little precarious, it's a little hard to define, it is that it's in proper, it's in the boroughs, right? It's a team of downtown. It's not out in Jersey. It's not up in Westchester. So if they have to move out there, they kind of lose a lot of that, what identity, what definition, what the distinction they have when compared to the Red Bulls, when compared to the Cosmos even. So it is vital that they get there. And I agree that this is a troubling situation that it hasn't gotten done yet. And it's really difficult when you listen to the double talk that goes on about the stadium. It doesn't seem like it's anywhere close to getting done. And it does seem a little bit double standardy when you look at how MLS has operated in other markets where they've required that stadium up front. It just speaks to this is all about a TV market and sort of a pipe dream about grabbing a hold of it. New York undoubtedly has a lot of football fans, but I use the term football purposely here. They're fans of Europe, and they have never really gravitated to MLS, and this is their pipe dream to get these guys. And some of them, I talked to the third rail guys, and they seem somewhat sincere, although they're irritated right now. But I just don't know how many there are to make it something that's truly organic.
Yeah,
Daniel,
that's a big question.
Let me jump in real quickly there. Dwayne, hit
sure, go ahead, Kordick.
Very important point, which is the television contract. I just got a tip the other day from someone out on the West Coast that's connected to one of the television networks that is getting this new MLS contract that said, look, we know this was before the Lampard thing unfolded. This was a couple of days before that. This New York City thing is all about television. Getting L.A. Back up and running is all about television. He said there were four elements to this. The networks were promised a second L.A. team, a second viable L.A. team that was marketable, not Chivas. So that's why you have LAFC. New York City FC, which had already been announced when the contract was done. Atlanta and Miami, those four TV markets that were not really kind of covered in MLS. Or New York and L.A. partially, Atlanta, Miami, not at all. Instead, what's unfolded is the New York team is kind of precarious. L.A. is not starting till 2017 when it was supposed to go continuously through, was the understanding both Fox and ESPN had. Atlanta did get announced. There's a team in Orlando, which I'm thrilled about personally, but there's no TV value. There's no national TV value to that market. Sacramento is another market that's being talked about, even less national TV value than Orlando. And Miami hasn't happened. So basically, if New York doesn't really move the needle, Miami is not, it doesn't get going in time. And the 2 years that they've lost the second LA team, there might be some case for the TV networks, the two TV networks, to go back to MLS and say, hey, you need to extend our contract for free for another 2 years, or knock a little bit off the price the next renegotiation. So the TV thing is very important. New York City too, NYCFC, LAFC, Miami, which is TBA, and Atlanta, all were about television. Orlando, Minnesota, Orlando, which is in now, Minnesota, which is probably coming, Sacramento, San Antonio, some of these other markets, Las Vegas, that are being talked about, are not about television. So the TV networks were promised a second team in New York and L.A. and established teams in Atlanta and Miami, and they haven't delivered on that completely yet.
Absolutely. Let me ask both of you, this will be the same question. Dwayne will go first, and then we'll go to Kardick. Dwayne, obviously, you probably know a lot of Torontoans that have or are supporting Toronto FC, and at the same time they're also supporting Manchester City like yourself. Have you talked to them about their opinions? And the same thing with you, Kardick. In South Florida, there has to be at least more than just one yourself as Manchester City fans as well down in South Florida. Dwayne, because Toronto FC is a part of the Toronto community, have there been discussions about NYCFC when they come up to face Toronto at BMO, or when Toronto goes to the Bronx? First Dwayne, and then Kardick.
Yeah, I have talked to the city group here about NYCFC. I think that Toronto's like a lot of major metropolitan cities in MLS, in that there are a lot of fans of the game that haven't necessarily gravitated to MLS despite TFC's success. They've been able to capture a lot of the market, but not all of it. That Euro snob, so to speak, market still is out there. Even in the most rabid of MLS markets, I would argue there are probably Euro snobs in Seattle even. They're out there, and that's the take I get. A lot of the people that talk about NYCFC up here have a passing interest in it from a Manchester perspective, but they don't really go to more than a couple TFC games a year. I do talk to one fellow that I know sits in the supporter section as well. He gets, you know, the piss taken out of him all the time by the boys at the pub during the City games. But, you know, he sort of laughs at it and just feels like me that he's not going to abandon TFC. God knows it might be easy some days, but he's not going to do that. So
not with the recent news, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. No, it's – yeah, I don't – again, it speaks to the core issue of the whole club itself, and I just – like, where is this crossover? Is this segment of fans that we forever have been chasing that may just not be catchable? And I sometimes question whether MLS – whether it's serving what it should be doing, what its goals are. Like, it keeps talking – Don Garber keeps talking about being, quote-unquote, one of the best leagues in the world by 2022, which makes me laugh every time I hear it. I was listening to a Seattle press conference today where they were talking about expanding their global reach. This stuff is silly in a lot of ways. MLS needs to become the most popular league in its own country before it can start talking in those terms. And it's nowhere near close to that. And I think that in because of its obsession with getting bigger and being better and where does it stand in the world, that we sometimes lose the plot and we sometimes fail to actually serve the American and the Canadian market to its fullest potential. MLS shouldn't be chasing big markets for TV contracts. They should be out there in places that demand the service and will support it. And they should be out there focusing on being that tier two league that can develop the next generation of players and not chase some pipe dream of being on equal terms with Serie A and the Premier League and La Liga. It's silly to me.
Go ahead, Claire.
Yeah, I completely agree with Dwayne on that last point. It is silly to me, and they need to establish themselves in their markets as the most popular football club in the markets they're in, which they're not in most of the markets, okay? They're not. There are more Chelsea fans in Los Angeles than there are Galaxy fans, even though that is their team that wins titles every year. I had this discussion with a journalist there who said, oh, well, the Galaxy, something about the Galaxy, and I said, there are actually more Chelsea fans in Orange County and in L.A. County and in Ventura County, those three counties. And he looked at me and thought about it and said, yeah, I guess you're right. So it's they have to do that. Now, getting to your initial question, I've kind of gotten the backlash about this because I decided to publicly announce, because I was toying with supporting NYCFC. I mean, I haven't had an MLS club for since the fusion and the mutiny were contracted after the 2001 season, but Orlando is coming into the league the same year, and I'm in Orlando an awful lot. Actually, at the time this was going on, the last 3-4 months, in fact, the last time I was on Dwayne's program, I was in Orlando because I was there. I was basically living there during the election, during the campaign. So I announced publicly in late September, early October, that I'm actually, you know, in spite of my love for City, blah, 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 I've thought about it. I've grappled with it. Had NYCFC come in a year before Orlando City, maybe I would have supported them, and the Man City thing would have been too strong. But I'm going to support Orlando City. And I just got an incredible backlash from my friends who are in the supporters group down here and who are City supporters, who thought it would be a no-brainer and that they couldn't believe it. But these are people who don't support local soccer to begin with. They're people who don't go to Strikers games. They haven't gone to Orlando games. They haven't gone to Tampa Bay games. They don't watch Major League Soccer. Their interest.
Don't worry, he'll pop back up, folks.
Yeah. So I kind of understand where they're coming from also, but I got significant backlash for it. The thing I will say though about that is that I have thought about it now that that is the first game. It's about 2 months away. It's March 8th at the Citrus Bowl. What is my reaction going to be? I'm going to be there, obviously. What's my reaction going to be when I see those blue kits and I see Etihad on the kits and it's just Adidas instead of Nike, but it's the same kit? I say I'm supporting Orlando City. I tend to support Orlando City, but I don't know emotionally what's going to happen to my heart when they actually come out on the pitch with those kits. If the kits were a little bit different, maybe it would be different also. So I, as of now, I'm not supporting NYCFC, but I don't know what's going to happen, honestly, when I see them play.
Gentlemen, obviously, we are in the middle of a CBA negotiation right now. Major League Soccer has already said that they are still losing money. and they hope that the players' union will see what's going on. Let me ask you in this way, and Dwayne can go first, and then Kardik. Dwayne, the players' union have seen out of Commissioner Don Garber, the explosion against Jurgen Klinsmann, getting over $110 million from this brand new Mandalay Bay group that has purchased the LAFC situation, and of course, what this whole situation with Frank Lampard, and of course, Man City 80%, the New York Yankees 20% of NYCFC. How do you think these negotiations are going to go now with, let's just say, these things hanging over Don Garber's head, and do you think there will be a strike now? Oops, I think we might have lost. Yep, we lost Dwayne. There we go.
You got me.
I got you. Yep, you heard the question.
I heard your question. Yeah, no, I think that a lockout's more likely than a strike. I think that the owners are going to want to maintain that control. I think that the players ultimately, for a lot of reasons, aren't going to force the issue too much. I think those that expect a massive bump in the salary cap are going to be disappointed. I think we'll see a modest bump in the cap. That's the issue most people want to talk about. We could see another designated player swap because I think MLS really likes the idea of having those marquee players come in, and certainly that's an expense that's going to the owners rather than the league as whole. For the players, the hill they're going to die on is that the club option years. They really want to get rid of those. So as long as MLS is willing to bend a little bit there, I think that we'll avoid a large work stoppage. We might get a little bit of the preseason canceled.
Kardik? Your opinion?
Yeah, CBA is going to be very interesting. The players' union doesn't have the stomach to actually strike. I'm going to tell you that full stop. The MLS players have had offers of different representation from different unions, including the NFLPA, much more aggressive unions, much more effective unions. They haven't done it. The MLSPA will not strike. They'll ultimately make some sort of deal with the owners. Now, a lockout is possible. I agree with Dwayne on that. I'll actually get some more perspective on this. I am meeting with some of the union reps here at the Combine in Fort Lauderdale on Friday or Saturday. So I actually might have something to report for you next week. But my guess is that a lockout is more likely, but probably the union caves as they have in prior CBA negotiations, and life goes on.
Absolutely, life does go on. Quickly go to TFC news for a minute. Dwayne, apparently you already know this. Jermaine Defoe, which was a bloody big deal, is going back to England with Leicester City. Only 1 year at Toronto from that big contract he got from Toronto FC. And then, of course, you got Robin Fraser now coming out, leaving the Red Bulls for Toronto FC for Greg Vanney's assistant as Greg Vanney's assistant coach. Talk about Defoe and then Robin Fraser.
Yeah, well, the Defoe situation is a bit hard to have a fresh take on at this point in time, to be blunt. It's just signings don't work sometimes, and this was a case where it simply didn't. And there's a lot of theories as to why. I think the player deserves a lot of the blame. I think that he came over here thinking that he was going to get lots of goals and get a call up to England, and it didn't happen, and then he sort of just mailed it in for a large part of the last half of the year. Certainly, if some of the rumors about TFC trying to talk behind his back and use his mother as leverage and all that sort of stuff are true, then certainly there's blame to be had there. But I think that the key with Defoe at this point in time is like I said, first off, to take a step real quick back, you have to separate the mistakes of TFC's past from the mistakes that have happened since the start of last year, because the management group is entirely different. You have to look at this new group entirely new and away from the errors of the past. There certainly were a lot of those to talk about. So I am reserving judgment on Defoe until I see what Bezbachenko does, how much they get for him, what they do, more importantly, what they do with that money. They need to replace him to a certain extent, although I think they like Bright DK. I think they feel he's going to be healthy and can bring something back there. They got Robbie Findlay, they think, can have a return to form. I think that they think that Gilberto coming back as a second year in his DP can add some story, that they can focus instead and spending their money more on a creative midfielder and to put some reinforcements at the back. They need to add some players to that core, but they're not as far behind as people think. In terms of Defoe, as I said, it really depends on what they do with the money. I'm not willing to completely throw them under the bus because sometimes signings don't work.
And
in terms of Frazier,
sorry,
I was just going to finish that. In terms of Frazier, I think the interesting thing there is if you look at all of the work that Vanny and Bezbachenko are doing, they are entirely looking internally as MLS, to MLS solutions. They're not. I don't think they're going to go for the big foreign splash anymore. Toronto's done that in the past. I think that that is another indication that they're going to use their contacts in Major League Soccer to try and solve TFC by using internal MLS mechanisms, internal MLS people.
All right. And, Kardik, finally for you, Ronaldo, not Cristiano Ronaldo, but
yeah.
The Brazilian Ronaldo has officially claimed to be part of the ownership group with Fort Lauderdale Strikers. How about that?
Yeah, he'll be doing a press conference a week from tomorrow here in Fort Lauderdale at the Hard Rock. I understand Grant Wallace lying down, and Grant gets a half an hour with him or something. But other than that, I guess it's going to be a free-for-all for reporters. And I'm interested in talking to him about what are his plans. Why Fort Lauderdale? Why did he invest in an NASL team? What's his interest in the game in North America and the United States? You know, he never, even at the end of his career, he would have been a nice player to come over to Major League Soccer. He never did. Never really showed any interest in the sport in this part of the world, other than, you know, he was marketed here, obviously, heavily by Nike and by Real Madrid when he was there. But I am really curious as to why he's doing this. And and whether he's going to be hands-on. I mean, the reports we've gotten, the things I've been told by the Strikers owners, is that he's going to be hands-on. He's going to be in Fort Lauderdale a lot. He's going to be there are even rumors he might come out of retirement and play, particularly with the Cosmos in the first game and Raul, a former teammate of his, being the star from New York. So I'm really curious. I'm withholding judgment until this press event. As I said, Grant gets a half an hour with him, but then I think every other reporter is going to have a chance to speak. You have about 5 minutes with him after Grant Wall's done. So I'm looking forward to it. And I can tell you something more definitively in a couple weeks then.
Awesome. Gentlemen, I thank you for your time. I really do appreciate it because you two, in my opinion, are the best Manchester City supporters, as well as you have the knowledge of what's going on over in England, and you bring it back to the North America. Thank you so much, Dwayne Rollins. Thank you so much, Carter Krishnire. And I'll talk to you before your respective seasons start.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And that is that, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to this special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I will be with you next Tuesday to discuss, of course, the start of the Feuerstein's Fire 2015 season. Enjoy your football. Bye-bye for now.